The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you this morning?
Boker tov, mo'adim l'simcha. I hear you're a big Harry fan. If that's what you think about Harry, what does it say about Meghan? This is the big question.
I don't think she's stupid.
Okay, well, there you go. Moving swiftly on, I saw a very fascinating article, a report that was published by the American Federation of Scientists, which has talked about the status of world nuclear forces. And it currently estimates that there are 13,000 nuclear warheads worldwide, which, by the way, compares to 70,000 nuclear warheads in 1987. It's fascinating to what extent the number of nuclear warheads has been reduced worldwide over time. But for me, the interesting bit was where Israel comes out on the list. And of course, Israel, as we know, has this policy of not acknowledging that it has any nuclear warheads at all, any nuclear facilities and capabilities. Of course, the American Federation of Scientists was not fooled into believing all of that, and has ranked Israel eighth on the list in terms of the number of nuclear warheads that it currently has at its disposal. So the list says that Russia and the US each have approximately 5,000 to 6,000 nuclear warheads each. Then comes China with about 350, France with 290, the UK with 225, Pakistan and India each have about 160, and then comes Israel, eighth on the list, with 90 nuclear warheads, at least according to this report. And at the end of the list, the ninth name on the list is North Korea, with 20 nuclear warheads. And as we already know, Iran is very much striving to be the 10th name on that particular list. So it's an interesting assessment of the situation. Of course, we will never really know to what extent it is true or not. But I suspect that there's an element of believability to this report.
It certainly doesn't sound completely out of whack, so very interesting indeed. A rocket from Gaza struck a home in Sderot last night.
Yeah, so this is just another step forward in terms of the current instability that we're experiencing. The day in Jerusalem yesterday was not a peaceful one. The flag march that was not authorized by the police went ahead nonetheless. I'm not exactly sure how that transpires, because usually the Israeli police are very, very strict about these things. And if authorization is not given, then things don't happen. And yet yesterday, that flag march did indeed proceed. It landed up around the area of the Jaffa Gate. The marchers were trying to proceed towards the Damascus Gate of the Old City of Jerusalem, an area which has been, in any event, without the flag marchers present there, has been highly controversial and quite violent, with lots of clashes between Muslim protesters and police over the past few weeks. And of course, that is exactly where the flag marchers were intent upon walking towards, this time with the member of Knesset, Itamar Ben-Gvir, leading their march as he wanted to go along and make his presence felt at the Damascus Gate. He himself is a controversial figure. He doesn't really have to do anything very much in order to stir up violence and to stir up reaction. And of course, he was very much intent upon doing that yesterday. The order came from Prime Minister Naftali Bennett not to allow the flag march to proceed to the Damascus Gate. And in particular, a specific order was given not to allow member of Knesset Itamar Ben-Gvir to proceed and to make his presence felt at the Damascus Gate. He felt that this was an affront to his rights. He came out saying that other members of Knesset, particularly Arab members of Knesset, had the right to go to the Damascus Gate, whereas he was being denied the right to go to the Damascus Gate. I think he forgot to mention that his intentions about going to the Damascus Gate might not have been as pure as he was trying to present. And nonetheless, he decided to set up a parliamentary office just outside the walls of the old city in order to invoke all kinds of parliamentary protection that are afforded to parliamentary offices belonging to members of Knesset. And of course, he set up his parliamentary office there overnight outside the walls of the old city. The march ended there. There have been clashes again this morning. That rocket was fired from Gaza last night quite late. It was about 8-9 o'clock when we heard that code red sirens had been sounded, and some shrapnel was reported to have fallen near to a house in Sderot. As it turns out, there was no report of an Iron Dome interception for that particular rocket, so it's not clear exactly how that rocket managed to find its way through, or indeed whether it was intercepted and what we saw landing on the house was just shrapnel from the interception. Not clear at the moment in the reports that I've received and read from the IDF, but we do know that some damage was caused to the house. Miraculously, a gas tank that was near the area where the shrapnel fell remained intact, did not explode. There were no explosions as such. Nobody was injured in that incident, and there were no further reports of rocket fire, even though apparently Iron Dome was activated during the night, although we now understand that that was not really rocket fire. It was more bullet fire that somehow got Iron Dome activated and caused some of the Tamir missiles, the outgoing missiles, to be fired in order to intercept what turned out not to be a rocket. We understand that there was also a failed attempt this morning at rocket fire from Gaza, which didn't go anywhere. Of course, the IDF was in action last night to respond to the rocket fire. They struck a military compound in Gaza, infrastructure for rocket manufacturing facilities, and the IDF apparently also managed to carry out a number of other raids striking Gaza infrastructure, all relatively low-key. There was talk about an attack against a structure with chemical materials, but really nothing too dramatic in terms of something that might escalate the situation beyond what it currently is. There was a response, but nothing to make it any worse. And we understand that there will be a closure across the entire area of the Judea and Samaria starting this evening over the last holiday of Pesach, which is, of course, tomorrow and lasting in through over Shabbat as well. And there will also be a strict closure around the Gaza Strip area in order to try to maximize the security as we head into the second Chag of Pesach. So still very much on edge, very much on tenterhooks. A lot of activity, still clashes this morning on the Temple Mount, even though Jews are now no longer allowed to ascend the Temple Mount, at least until the end of Ramadan. And so even though the police have tried to really pull in and to secure the area as much as possible to provide maximum security, there are still many, many clashes indeed. And one can't rule out the possibility that the situation could escalate further. Some people have called this the most significant uptick in violence and in protests since last year's Gaza offensive operation, Protector of the Walls. But as things stand at the moment, we still haven't seen the end of this particular cycle.
Very, very frightening. And it's almost like it's trying so hard to become something, but and is really moving up incrementally rather than a spontaneous thing. It really does.
That's true.
I really do get the sense that it's trying very hard.
In previous times when we've seen this situation like this break out into a broader conflict, it seems as if the last little bit happens so quickly. It doesn't feel like it goes, you know, gradually. We've seen a gradual uptick over the last few weeks. And then, you know, traditionally when we've seen this break out into more of a conflict, it just seems to, the last bit seems to go so quickly that you almost don't realize that it's happening. And I'm very much hopeful that they can somehow put a lid on all of this and not allow that to happen this time around. Of course, not only are we celebrating the end of Pesach now, but in another week we have Yom HaShoah, and in 2 weeks from now we have Yom HaTzmaut, and this, soon after that, Lag BaOmer and Shavuot. So we're heading into a holiday period which would be very much appreciated to have some sort of peace and security without the concern that things might break out into a violent situation.
Indeed. What is happening with Iran? I see that there's been an announcement about them having captured some Israeli spies.
Yeah, so this was a little report, really. It wasn't a major report that was made by Iran and the capture of these Israeli spies. And I just wonder to what extent this is just Iran trying to steal the news in terms of just sending the right information, particularly to the electorate. Let's just put things into perspective. They claim that they caught three Mossad spies in the Sistan and Balochistan province, which is in the southeast area of Iran, quite near the border with Pakistan and Afghanistan. This was announced yesterday by the semi-official FARS news agency. They claim that these three people were involved in disseminating classified information and documents. That's what we know. Now, when we talk about Mossad spies, we have in our mind Israelis running around these provincial areas, trying to gather information, trying to gather intelligence, trying to work their way through things. That's not always the case, because actually most of the information that the Mossad manages to get is through local people who live and work there and who might be willing to give up a little bit of information about what they do, what they see, what they experience, what their family members might do, which could be potentially considered to be sensitive information, but in fact may not be all that sensitive. They may not be in possession of anything that is super sensitive, but they're just giving kind of daily information. And I suspect that this is what we're talking about here, where we're talking about just probably three local people who might have been contacted by people who may be connected somehow to the Mossad passing information and who may just be disseminating a little bit of local information. This seems to be very, very low key indeed. I don't think that this is a major incident of any significance. And so I think it's just simply Iran trying to present a certain... they're just trying to veneer the situation to a certain degree to try and show the local people that they're in control of the situation and that Israel doesn't have access to the type of sensitive information that people may be concerned about. So I don't consider this to be a significant story in the way that it's been presented at the moment.
There was a great announcement, I think, last night that coming Saturday evening, public places will not require you to mask up here in Israel. Tell us about this announcement.
Indoor areas in particular, not outdoor. Now we're talking about indoor areas. So let's just talk about the current status of corona in Israel. Currently, we have approximately 50,000 people who have been officially diagnosed and are currently in isolation with corona. Most of the corona that's being suffered these days in Israel is very relatively low-key. People are able to cope with it at home, a little bit of some flu symptoms of some sort or another. So the current strains that people are suffering from seem to be pretty low key. Having said that, there are still something like 200 people in hospital suffering with quite serious consequences of corona, and still something like 70 or 80 people who are being ventilated as a result of having contracted corona. The latest number of the latest statistics that I saw concerning the new diagnoses on a daily basis was given not from yesterday but from the day before, about 4,500 new cases diagnosed every on that particular day, which is not an insignificant number. It's still a fair number of people being diagnosed, but because of the fact that it seems to be much, much lower impact, the government has decided that it is now no longer required for people to wear masks indoors at all. So as of 8 o'clock on Saturday night, just when all the transactions are being done to buy back chametz and to try and get back onto a local footing without, you know, after Pesach footing, people will also be taking off their masks finally, at least for now. There is also talk about the possibility of reducing the tests being done at Ben-Gurion Airport. As you will know, Howard, everybody who lands at Ben-Gurion Airport is required to take a PCR test. So there is some discussion now about taking that particular requirement away. Slowly but surely, the restrictions are being scaled down. Whether or not this is ultimately justified, I guess we will be able to tell with the benefit of hindsight. Because right now, at least, the government is saying, you know, we are getting back onto as normal a footing as we possibly can, sort of pre-corona style. And so that's kind of a good way for
what do you think it means? What do you think it means in terms of masks on airplanes? I know that the Americans have done away with it. What do you think that means in terms of Israel, indoor spaces? Do you think that...
Yeah, I think that the masks on aeroplanes are a little bit away, you know, away off yet. I don't think that people are quite ready to take their masks off on aeroplanes, although I have seen crew on aeroplanes really fighting with some members, of the passengers to make sure that their masks are on properly. I don't know that we're all ready to take our masks off on the planes yet, even though I understand that there's also some sort of a ventilation situation in planes which actually purifies the air, which should make things better rather than worse. But I think that it's certainly coming. I can see that in the distance. So definitely this is a step forward. And as I say, it's a great way to end Pesach, even though for Israelis this year, Pesach will be an extra day longer. Usually we would have the Chag, which will be tomorrow, and that would be the end of Pesach. But of course, because the Chag falls into Shabbat, we are forced to at least not celebrate Pesach, but at least eat as if though it is still Pesach on Shabbat, finally coming out on Saturday night. So I wish you and I wish your families all Chag Sameach, Shabbat Shalom. I hope your Pesach has been a good one, and that you will celebrate accordingly. Mimuna, of course, will be on Sunday. We'll talk a little bit about that on Monday.
Anthony Reich, thank you as always. And of course, we look forward to catching up with you on Monday morning. Have a Chag Sameach, Shabbat Shalom, and we'll speak to you then.